You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In October 2001, a month after 9/11, the United States launched what has become its longest war, the war in Afghanistan. A month after that, Carlotta Gall began reporting from Afghanistan for the New York Times, and she spent the better part of 12 years there until she became the Times correspondent in North Africa last year. Her new book, The Wrong Enemy, America in Afghanistan, 2001-2014, is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and I'm pleased Carlotta Gall could join us today to discuss it. Hi.
Hi, thank you.
On Friday, an Afghan police commander shot AP photographer Anya Niedringhaus and reporter Kathy Gannon. Niedringhaus died. A month ago, Swedish journalist Niels Horner was gunned down in Kabul. Has it become less safe than when you were there in Afghanistan?
I think, yes, certainly for foreign journalists, it's been a very bad couple of weeks. We also had an Afghan journalist and all his family killed. So the targeting of journalists was some new wave, but it's always been dangerous. Yeah.
And why journalists, do you think?
I think it was that and election observers. I think there was an effort to attack foreigners to, you know, discourage the involvement, for, you know, encourage people to leave and abandon Afghanistan. That's the plan.
And that's why the a very popular restaurant was shot up last year.
That's right, in January.
Yeah. I'm assuming everybody knows everybody.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I was just in Kabul for a 5-day quick look at the election campaign, and I hung out for the 3 days with Anya and Kathy.
What do we know about the results of the election?
Not much yet. They're only just counting, and it's going to be quite slow. But we can guess that it's probably going to go to a second round because none of the front runners were overwhelmingly strong to win 50% plus one.
Well, voter turnout was higher than expected, roughly the same as it was in the United States in 2012 during the presidential election, 58%. Hamid Karzai has been in power since 2001. How might the results of the election affect his ongoing influence? Does his man have a good chance of being one of the candidates in the runoff?
No, we think the person we think, Zalmay Rasool, that he wanted was trailing, as far as we know. So he might come in a third, in which case the other two will go forward to the second round. But I think Karzai's also had a foot in both camps, so I think he also now will support Ashraf Ghani, who's the main Pashtun candidate.
Well, wasn't Karzai accused of stuffing ballot boxes in the previous election?
He was, and I think there's great fear that the sort of state institutions still loyal to him will try and do the same this time. But because nobody quite knows who will win this time, because it's no longer Karzai, there's a feeling that perhaps the officials will do a better job this year.
Well, the United States and Afghanistan hammered out a security deal that Karzai has refused to sign. What's likely to happen to that?
Well, that's clear that all three frontrunners have said they will sign it once inaugurated. So that, I think, will go ahead. And I think the U.S. understands that and is waiting for the new president.
Your title is The Wrong Enemy. Is Karzai one of the right enemies?
I have a whole chapter on him, so readers can make up their own mind. But I think he has been on the right side of things. But I think he's just become very disillusioned and very, very upset at the treatment. He feels betrayed by the West in many ways.
We recently did a segment on corruption, all the money that just seems to have gone missing in Afghanistan. And when we accuse the Karzai government of corruption, it's not lost on Karzai.
No, that's right. He reads everything. And he's very he watches to see the criticisms of his own family, which he really doesn't like. He's very, very typically Afghan in that way. He takes that personally. But he hasn't done enough to curb the corruption.
The United States has spent years combating the Taliban in Afghanistan. Are they the wrong enemy?
Well, this is what I'm really looking at, because, of course, the Taliban are part of the problem. But what the foreign forces did, American and NATO troops, was fight so much in the villages where I don't think was the real enemy. Taliban insurgents were sometimes there, but often Afghan civilians suffered. And really the source of the problem and the leadership of the Taliban and the mentors of the Taliban, the Pakistanis, are, of course, across the border in Pakistan.
Well, there have been reports about Pakistani support for the Taliban all over the years, and including charges by the Afghans. Did you uncover any new evidence of a Pakistani connection?
I did. A lot of the book is actually putting all the pieces together, which some of which I'd reported before. But by the end, I did actually find an inside source who said, yes, the Pakistanis were actually hiding and handling bin Laden. So that was a revelation.
And then Taliban militants captured your former colleague, David Rohde, in Afghanistan, and then they moved him to Pakistan and held him there for months. Did the Pakistani government or intelligence service know about that or support that?
I think they did know, but they always said they didn't know, and they always said he was being held in Afghanistan, which was proved wrong when he escaped, and we learned where he'd been all the time.
Well, there are two options here. Either they knew and they lied, or they didn't know and they're less competent than they'd like to claim they are.
Well, this is the argument the Pakistanis always use, and actually they prefer to be known as incompetent rather than complicit, but I would come down on the side of complicit, far too complicit.
And you report that the Pakistani intelligence service specifically devoted resources to protect Osama bin Laden. How and why would the ISI want to protect him?
So that's a great question. After looking at it all these years, I think they wanted to protect him and use him to influence their own militants, to hold sway in this great fight for supremacy in Afghanistan and over their own other militants for other reasons.
But I understand they're wanting to use the Taliban, but Al-Qaeda is really a foreign group as far as Afghanistan is concerned. Well, they want to support anybody who they think can help them?
Well, they also have camps where they're training a lot of foreign fighters. So there are Chinese Muslims who are training there who then go back to China and do attacks. There are Central Asians.
Those are the Uyghurs?
Yes, the Uyghurs. There are Central Asians. There are many now fighters going off to Syria. So I think there is. They see a bigger war at large, and I think they see bin Laden. He was a crucial figurehead for that.
Is this a policy of the entire government or just portions of it? Because you get the feeling that this is a government that's at war with itself.
Well, it's the military, and this is the problem with Pakistan. Most of its life since independence in 1947, it's been dominated by military governments. The civilian governments have little say. And I think it's a military and its intelligence arm, the ISI it's called, which is out of control. And they've got to get a grip on their military, and they haven't yet. I think that's coming, actually, with development and with the civilian governments now finally back in power for a second term, they will get a hold of it. But at the moment, the military is out of control.
Well, is the military just the military? Aren't they also involved in business?
Yes, they have huge. They're like any country that's been dominated by military. They have businesses, they have fertilizer factories, they have huge foundations for the army and retirement pensions. And they have the bulk of the budget. It's never published or transparent, but they command a huge amount of the national budget.
My guest is Carlotta Gall. Her book, The Wrong Enemy, America and Afghanistan, 2001-2014. Osama bin Laden and others established a base, Al-Qaeda. Or do you say Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda, yeah.
They did that after the Soviets pulled out of Afghanistan in 1989. Is there any evidence of Pakistani involvement that far back? Going all the way back to when the Soviets pulled out and all of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda really wound up seeing Afghanistan as fertile territory.
This is when it all started and came together. The Pakistanis then were arguing, if we don't help the Afghans fight the Soviet invasion, then we'll be next. And so there was a paranoia in it. There is actually an insecurity that drives all this, that's very present in Pakistan thinking.
In 2005, the British journalist Robert Fisk wrote that a member of a U.S. Special Forces intelligence team told him that middle-ranking Pakistani army officers were tipping off al-Qaeda to avoid American organized raids. How much control does the Pakistani government have over its own military and intelligence services when they could do that sort of thing?
Well, this is very interesting. Even General Musharraf, who was president when at 9/11, he ordered, and I have this story in the book, he asked his ISI chief, his intelligence chief, to go to Mullah Omar, the Taliban leader in Afghanistan, and tell him to give up, hand over bin Laden. And he traveled there, but he didn't give that order or that request. He actually told Mullah Omar, carry on, resist, go to the mountains if you have to, but resist.
So he ignored his orders.
He ignored his orders. And I think Musharraf didn't know at the time. I think it became clear later that Musharraf wasn't wholly in control of his intelligence service. So I think that's part of the problem. Certainly a civilian prime minister has very little control.
Now, has the United States been totally unaware of this?
That's the great question. I, for years, I struggled with this. I couldn't understand why some diplomats just seemed to be so ignorant when I tested some of the things I found out on the ground. And now I think, especially having written the book, people are writing to me, especially former diplomats, former generals, to say I'm on the right track. And so they're saying, no, they're being disingenuous.
Has there been a certain amount of pushback from Pakistan that leads to resistance in believing that?
There's a lot of pushback from the officials in Pakistan, of course, that you know I'm not right, and that I've got an axe to grind.
And what is your axe to grind?
Well, that's the famous. I think they mean the famous incident in 2006 when I was in Quetta in Pakistan, doing a story uncovering the Taliban presence in Quetta, and I got raided and beaten up in my hotel room. And all my things seized, my notebooks and computer and phones, and all my contacts were tracked down. Quite nasty incident. And
was that the ISI?
It was the ISI, yeah. When it was designed, we learned later that it was to frighten me off, to stop me reporting.
It didn't. And so you have a vendetta, they say.
Right.
Of course, this is partly based on an understanding that they did something to you.
They made me very angry. But actually, yeah, there's no vendetta. I just carried on reporting. And it's just now, after 12 years, it was time to put it all together for the reader.
Former counterterrorism official Richard Clark and others strongly criticized the Bush administration both for failing to appreciate the threat of al-Qaeda and what it represented, and for failing to hunt down Osama bin Laden in their drive to go to war in Iraq. Has the U.S. consistently mistaken where its priorities lie?
Certainly by going off to Iraq. That was, I think, a big mistake because they did take their eye off the ball.
And now many prominent politicians and others in the United States are urging U.S. action against Iran. What kind of effect is that going to have on the area?
The mind boggles, yes, because, Pakistan is already a nuclear power. Iran wants to become one, and Afghanistan's sandwiched in the middle, which is part of why it's had so many problems. Being where it is. Yes, I think there's a very great need to actually look at what's happening still in Pakistan with all the militants. Yeah.
My guest is Carlotta Gall, who's worked for The New York Times since 1999, including more than 10 years in Afghanistan and Pakistan, previously in the Balkans and Russia for the Financial Times and Moscow Times. You were in Chechnya as well?
That's right. Yeah.
You like to go to nice places.
I found I could do the job, and so I just kept doing it.
Her book, The Wrong Enemy, America in Afghanistan, 2001-2014, is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. Back with Carlotta Gall of The New York Times. Her book, The Wrong Enemy, America in Afghanistan, 2001-2014, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. The U.S. campaign in Afghanistan was first called Operation Infinite Justice, and then it was changed to Operation Enduring Freedom. George W. Bush referred to the American war as a crusade, which got a lot of people upset. Yeah. Do you think American leaders have been as overconfident or arrogant or incompetent as the Soviets were?
No. I mean, that the Soviet thing was even, you know, even more unbelievable. They were such a closed system. And I actually was a student of Russian at the time, and I was in the Soviet Union in the 80s. That was a very blind and brutal war. And I think we are better than that. But we have made our mistakes. All right.
Was Pakistan involved when the Soviets were there?
Certainly. And they were the main conduit for all the aid that went to the resistance. And so, of course, that's how they learned how to manage a proxy force and how to sponsor a guerrilla war. And they were so proud at its success. I think that's what encouraged them to continue.
But what do they have to gain by it ultimately? Is this really about India and China, perhaps, countries? For example, are they afraid that India might very well establish a sphere of influence in Afghanistan and leave them out?
Yes, I think that's what the Pakistani paranoia, you know, if you look at them since they got independence in 1947, they lost half their territory when Bangladesh broke off in the 70s.
And they don't take responsibility for that?
No, they see that they're being robbed of their, you know, of part of their nation. And so the military especially feel that. And I think they haven't examined, yes, their role properly in that. But the Pakistani military feels that they have to protect their territory. And to do that, they feel they need to dominate Afghanistan as a sort of buffer state, keep India away.
Well, everyone who is interested in history knows that Afghanistan has been a place that nobody really has been able to dominate. Mm-hmm. The Pakistanis think they have something going that others don't have. I guess they do with the Taliban, because the Taliban were formed in Pakistan and were really, as you say, were to some degree a proxy government for them.
Yes, and they really did command and control them. So I think Pakistan is unreconstructed in that way. Some of them, I heard an intelligence official once describe Afghanistan as their fifth province. I think that's the way they would like it.
So are they banking on the Taliban making a comeback?
Yes, but they're clever. I think they think they can control the Taliban and use them. They don't necessarily see them as ruling again, because I think they knew that the world would not put up with that, the Western world.
But they weren't controlling the Taliban the last time the Taliban was.
Oh, they were, actually. I show that they were a covert sponsor, but they were definitely controlling them. And I think they always manipulated and controlled Mullah Omar, the leader, yes.
Well, then wouldn't they have at least suggested that 9/11 was a bad idea?
Great question. I show, and I'm sure, that they knew 9/11 was coming. But possibly they knew something big was happening. Perhaps they didn't know quite what. I'm sure they would have known some big attack was coming. And yes, didn't they see that would crush everything that then came after?
Now, Osama bin Laden found refuge in Pakistan. Whether the government knew or not is still open to debate. But the United States has incredible surveillance worldwide. And the question is, if George W. Bush had gone after Osama bin Laden, specifically after 9/11, could the United States have gotten him far sooner and eliminated a lot of the tension with Pakistan?
There's a great deal of that's been written that they should have caught him at Tora Bora, that they should have put in more troops on the border. They should not have trusted Pakistan to try and stop them.
And they were also trusting Afghan warlords to do the job when they could be just as easily bought off, which they were.
Right. But more important, he came over to Pakistan. Everyone knew he'd escaped into Pakistan. And then very little was done after that. And I think that was a huge mistake. And then to turn away to Iraq, which obviously consumed all efforts and a great deal of intelligence efforts, were turned away to Iraq. So that was a huge mistake.
What does the Pakistani press report when all of these stories about the Pakistani government's support of the Taliban and involvement in Afghanistan are reported?
Well, that was the great thing that happened. I ran extracts of my story, of my book, recently in the New York Times magazine, and then it went on the front page of the International New York Times. And the Pakistani version, which comes out, ran a blank page on the front page where the story should have run.
And they have control over the New York Times?
It was excuse me, it was self-censorship by the editors. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, there's no censors as such in Pakistan, but there's a very strong guidelines laid down by the military intelligence who say where the red lines are. And that was obviously a distasteful article. And the editors, I think, preferred to just have a blank page.
You quoted an unnamed former Western diplomat describing a Pakistani proxy invasion. Well, that suggests that Western nations, not just the United States, know about Pakistan's activity. How are they dealing with this?
I think this is really important, that still I see the administration in Washington as divided. The diplomats and CIA officials and military have different opinions on this.
The State Department and the CIA are at war again. They often are.
Yes. And so a lot of diplomats will say, you know, keep the relationship. There's no proof that they knew. I've had military people write to me since my article came out saying I'm on the right track. So I think there's really division in America, and that has to end before you can have a united policy.
My guest is Carlotta Gall. Her book, The Wrong Enemy, America in Afghanistan, 2001-2014. Published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, okay, so Pakistan has been engaging in a proxy war. The United States conducted a proxy war in Afghanistan against the Soviets by supporting the Mujahideen. Is this seen as a certain amount of hypocrisy on our part?
No, I think there's a great difference because the Soviet invasion, they were helping the Mujahideen resist an occupation. Pakistan.
We were in agreement there, the United States and Pakistan.
Yes, and the most of the Western world was in agreement. You know, and Britain and France and other countries also helped, as did, of course, Saudi Arabia. But now you've got a country sponsoring Taliban, okay, against a vast array of 40 countries in NATO and America. But now also, if they withdraw, it's essentially Pakistan trying to annex another country. And that, as Admiral Mike Mullen said before Congress, that would merit sanctions.
Well, as we see now in the Crimea.
Right.
But how did the Pakistanis see American criticism in light of past American support of Augusto Pinochet or Saddam Hussein or the Contras or now the MEK in Iran?
Yeah, well, this is where America's got to face up to its own actions and I think become much more clear to the world what it does stand for. But I think on Pakistan, a lot of Pakistanis will tell you they're fed up with the support for the military, because a lot of the aid that's gone to Pakistan in the last decade has supported the military and has ensured that Musharraf could continue what was a dictatorship.
Well, we supported the Pakistani military and then sent money to India as well. So is the United States to some degree involved in the continued tensions between those two countries?
They certainly haven't done enough to try and bring peace. I know.
And India right now is kind of upset with the United States because of this.
Yeah, I mean, these two are tricky countries and they do have a very long intractable argument, and Kashmir is at the crux of that, which both claim that territory. So it is very difficult. And I know Richard Holbrooke, who was special envoy, tried to get involved because he saw the India-Pakistan element as crucial, but he was rebuffed. So it is difficult.
And where does China, what role does China play in all of this?
China wants to get involved, and I think there should be obviously a much bigger work in a sort of contact group of the nations around to help China's involvement improve things. They have a lot of clout with Pakistan.
What's your view of the Bush administration policy with Afghanistan compared to the Obama administration's? How much of a change was there when Obama took office?
Well, it's very interesting because Obama's called in his campaign, he called a spade a spade. He said, Pakistan is part of the problem. We're going to go after bin Laden. We're going to go to the source of the problem, which all sounded great. And sure enough, he did get bin Laden, but he's gone back to business as usual on the rest of it.
And so, just made withdrawal the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
Well, Donald Rumsfeld has said that relations with Afghan President Hamid Karzai have gone downhill like a toboggan. And he said of President Obama that a trained ape could do better at getting agreements with other countries.
That's true. The relationship has gone down. But many people, when I talk about that, point to, both in Afghanistan and here, point to it actually was deteriorating already. And Condi Rice had a very difficult meeting with Karzai a year or two before the change in the administration here. So I think the early days, which were so good, the honeymoon, as it were, with Karzai, was already deteriorating.
After Obama took office, General Stanley McChrystal took command of the United States and the ISAF force in 2009. Did he change the American approach, and was that appreciated by Afghanistan?
He did, and I think by the people who are in the South and who saw what he was trying to achieve, they really did appreciate it. What he did was bring in a surge, and it really changed the whole dynamic in the South.
And his goal was to protect civilians.
Yes, of course, but when you do a surge and you pour extra troops in, you also have to fight. So some, I think, in the South will remember it as an intensification of the war, but it did clear the Taliban, and it's much, much better than it was a few years ago.
You say it brought a dramatic increase in night raids, something you also wrote about in 2007. The Afghans don't like night raids.
No, they don't, but part of it is because the Taliban really don't like it. The Taliban were getting hit very hard. So you would get communities complaining about them, partly inspired by Taliban. But yes, nobody likes having their house raided.
Well, you suggested that the honeymoon with the United States is long gone. How did they see American involvement in comparison with Pakistan's? I mean, do they think that the United States is a bulwark against Pakistan, or Pakistan is defending them against the United States in a way?
I think there's a weariness, and there's an upset feeling among the Afghans that America has always appeared to be on their side, but has never done anything to deal with Pakistan. And this is where Karzai feels betrayed, and Afghans feel misunderstood that the real crux of the war has not been tackled, and so they're very disillusioned.
With American support, the Afghans resisted Soviet occupation. Do Afghans see any similarities between the Soviets and the Americans? Have they seen our presence as a kind of an occupation as well?
Some. I mean, in the North, they don't see it like that. Anywhere in Kabul
or
in the
North. Well, the North was more friendly from the start.
Yes, and they were relieved. They were under real oppression by the Taliban. So they were freed, as it were. So for them, it was a liberation. But in the South, some people, especially the ones who are upset or have lost their homes or their family, they will say it's just as bad as the Russian times. And that's very hard to listen to. I mean, to hear, it's heartbreaking.
Now, there's been a debate over the years just how much Pakistan has been involved in all of this. Has that changed? Is the prevailing view among journalists concerning U.S. policy and Pakistan pretty much the same, no matter who the journalist is?
I think if any journalist who spent time on the ground, whether in Afghanistan or Pakistan, knows the level of involvement. You hear it every day. You cannot miss it. I think people who fly in, especially people who talk to Pakistanis who are very plausible, the officials, they don't quite understand the level.
Well, one of the goals, at least in theory, in American journalism is objectivity. Reporters should not express a point of view or an opinion. They shouldn't do that outside of their news reports. Do events and circumstances like the ones you report make that standard something impossible to attain?
No, I think that's what I did all these years. But in the end, you get very frustrated because somehow people you feel, are you misrepresenting things, or have you made it clear? So this is really why I wrote a book, because in a book, people actually do want you to, if not have an opinion, at least state your case much more strongly. And that's what I felt I had to do, because there was still confusion after so long, and after we've been at war in this country for 12 years, there's still a misapprehension about what's the real cause.
Well, you said that the Pakistanis see this as a vendetta on your part. What about American officials? Have you gotten any feedback from them? There are people in the Bush administration who still think that they did nothing wrong.
That's right, but I think they might. I haven't talked personally to people like Rumsfeld, but I have had people who I've interviewed and kept in email contact who have commended the book and have said they were part of it. For example, one person, Zalmay Khalilzad, was in the Bush administration, but I quote him in the book because he actually came out quite strongly at the time criticizing Pakistan, and I think he felt the heat for it. But he was one of those officials who didn't want to stay quiet, and he could see what was happening. So some of them got it. Some of them, you know, still today say they don't think I'm right, yes.
Just one more thing. American journalists are often criticized for living with each other in isolated situations. Is there a very different Afghanistan when you actually spend time with the people?
I think so. I mean, I lived there for 12 years.
Well, you made it a point to not just live in an isolated situation.
Yeah. I mean, I had a house. I had horses. I used to go riding with friends. I used to travel all over the country. So, I just now went to see a friend who's a widow and sat in her tiny little house. I think that's incredibly important part of being a foreign correspondent, to live among the people.
And now you're in North Africa?
Mm-hmm.
Where?
In Tunisia.
The only country that is deemed something of a success as a result of the Arab Spring?
It's inspiring. It's still got its problems, but it's very inspiring to watch, yes.
Carlotta Gall's book, The Wrong Enemy, America in Afghanistan, 2001-2014, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.